This episode of Linux Action Show is brought to you by GoDaddy.com.
And by Ting.com. Head over to last.ting.com and save $25 off your first device.
And welcome to the Linux Action Show, Season 26, Episode 1. My name is Chris.
My name is Matt.
Hey there, Matt. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Should I tell the folks what we got going on today?
Let's hear it.
Big show today, Matt. Really big show. In the second half of the show, the CEO of System 76, Carl Ritchell, will be joining us to discuss a lot of the big changes that Canonical announced for Ubuntu this week. We're talking the rolling release, potentially, that could be coming up, the mirror display server, Unity switching over to Qt, which means a total rewrite of Unity, and, of course, the explosive community reaction that's been erupting all week long. In fact, Matt, I think in our chat room right now, we probably have the most Arch Linux users we've ever had.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's
got a lot of people, I think, switched over this week. So we'll be talking about that. And of course, in the news segment, we've got some great news for you KDE users and a few other good surprises in there. And,
always have surprises for you.
Yeah, I know. We've got some really great picks this week, too, which is coming up right here. And of course, at the end of the show, we're going to cover some great emails. Heck of a show, Matt. Why don't we start with our Runs Linux pick this week?
Let's hear it.
All right, Matt, this one's a great one. In fact, it's a little bit of a crossover from a topic that just came up on TechSnap, making sure that these types of devices were secure, and that is high-performance network video recorders run Linux. And these are what a lot of people call NVRs, and they're network video recorders, and you can have multiple cameras hooked up to them. But sometimes you want to have maybe, say, a lot of cameras, maybe 16, 32 cameras, something like that. Well, then you're going to need a real man's OS, Matt, and that's where Linux comes in. And these NVRs are capable of doing video surveillance, license plate recognition, access control, ATM monitoring, and all other kinds of things. And to ensure that the video is not lost, they run on embedded Linux, because you're thinking about the amount of data throughput that many cameras could potentially have. In the case of the 8000 series NVR model, you're talking 32 cameras connected via IP.
Whoa!
Yeah, or you could go standard analog cameras and hook up to 16 of them.
That's not bad either.
It records everything in H.264, has 12 gigabytes of internal storage, which really is not a lot.
Not really, but you know, the one feature you mentioned during the list there that really caught my attention is you said that it has the ability to recognize content.
Yeah.
Like perhaps like how YouTube does that, for instance.
And, oh, interesting.
Yeah, think about that. I mean, like, yeah, because I've always wondered, how do they know? What are they able to, you know?
You know, there's always motion tracking for sure. Like once a camera sees motion, it starts recording. The other thing that's interesting is this system sort of has like a real-time health check of the cameras. It does remote surveillance. You can actually use a QR code. This is kind of neat too, as somebody who's done a lot of IT inventory over the years.
Right.
They ship each box with a QR code on there, and you walk up to the QR code and you scan it with your smartphone, and it comes up as long as you have their app. With information about the product, its warranty status, repair processing, and troubleshooting, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, from a management perspective, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I've had a few clients that have used systems like this, and I worked at a school district that had a system like this, and they had like its own operating system back then.
Oh, really?
So now these are becoming more like general computers, but you still have to have a real nice OS to power it.
Sweet.
Yeah. All right, Matt. Well, my Android pick this week, if you were watching the live stream, then you just saw me trying out a couple of them. I've just loaded up a few of these apps. I'm going to get a whole batch of stuff. We're going to be a whole bundle, you might say. So those of you who joined us live, welcome. We are doing the show at the new 10 a.m. Pacific Daylight Pacific Time, which is...
Yeah, we're still getting used to that. It's a little bit...
Which makes it like, 5 p.m. UTC, 1 p.m. Eastern.
Hour earlier for us, regardless.
Yeah, over at jblive.tv, and you can join us and hang out in the chat room and you know, watch us screw around on the...
We do some crazy stuff. Yeah, the live show's where it's at.
All right, Matt. Well, before we get to the picks this week, let's thank our sponsor, GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy.com has a great deal for you guys if you want to try out some really, really fantastic hosting. Go use the code HOSTDEAL3 when you check out, and you're going to get economy hosting for a year for $1 a month.
Whoa!
A year for $1 a month. So if you've had a project you wanted to throw online to get people to look at, or if you want to move something out of your house, HOSTDEAL3 when you check out. That'll get you $1 a year hosting. That's crazy.
I mean, what a great way to like test out a project, too, to kind of get your feet wet before you decide what you're going to do with it or whether you're going to continue with it. That's really sweet.
My brain isn't even capable of processing how that can be possible. And, you know, I think a big part of
it's like literally grab cushion off couch, find coinage.
Throw at them.
Throw it at it.
Yeah. You know, we were thankful in that recently you might have noticed the Linux Action Show badge showed up on Danica's NASCAR uniform.
I wondered what was going on there.
She's a race car driver, Matt. Nice. I don't know if you knew that. And she has badges on there. Now she's got a Linux Action Show badge on there. And, of course, this was thanks to the $15 million Kickstarter fund that we kicked off last week and was funded. And now we've purchased this. But you could help us sort of pay the debt on that, because I put it all on my Discover card, by supporting our sponsor and visiting GoDaddy.com. Use that code HOSTDEAL3 to get a dollar economy hosting for a year when you check out. Or, heck, if you got something else in mind, use the code GO35 off 3. You'll save 35% off your order for any new order. Or Linux295 to get a .com for $2.95. Active for a little bit longer.
Oh, I love that. That's my favorite right there. Yeah. Love that.
So thank you to GoDaddy.com. And thank you, Danica, for continuing to break into the GoDaddy data centers and steal us those fantastic deals while she drives a race car.
And wearing that patch. Right on.
Yeah, it looks good. It looks really good. Yep.
I'm liking it.
It's right there.
It's above Goodyear. And,
where her where her mammary nothing, but it's good. It's good. It's good.
Good placement.
Yep. All right, Matt. So moving on, I want to tell you about my Android pick this week. Now, if you followed the news out there, ladies and gentlemen, it's been no surprise to you. You already know about this, but the Humble Bundle is out, right? The new Humble Bundle and
Branch Spanking New.
Hey, Millie, here, I'll plug in a
little soundage.
We'll play the trailer. There's some good games in this, and these guys put out a good trailer.
Android 5 standing by.
Oh,
it's pay what you want, DRM free.
Okay.
Windows Android.
And helps charity. Beat Hazard Ultra. Turn your songs into bullet hell space battles.
If you think that's big, you should see my other snake.
He's doing Sean Connery impressions right now.
Solar 2. Making its Android debut.
So we'll link. You can watch the whole video in the show notes, but it's great. And one of the things that the Humble Bundle is doing now is, just like it's always been, you just pay what you want. That's not new, right? But the thing that I really like is because these are Android. Now, a lot of these are available for the Linux operating system, too. Yeah, the GNU / Linux.
Nice.
So if you want that, you can.
Sure.
And once you log into your account, you know, why don't I just log in and I'll show it to you?
Yeah, so that'd be better.
I'll go over to the Humble Bundle here. One of the things you can do when you buy the Humble Bundle is you can either choose to set up an account or you can just purchase anonymously, as it were.
That's kind of cool.
You know, to make things convenient for myself, I've set up an account. And now that I have done that, I log into said account here. You can see, this is my Humble Bundle right here.
The library list there.
Yeah, and if I choose the filter here to Android, you see this here? It gives me this URL.
Oh, okay, you can filter by Linux, platform, by Android, or whatever. Okay.
And so it gives me this URL. And if I click this URL, or if it's a phone, I can send myself a text, or I can send an email, and it'll email me the link. That brings you to their Humble Bundle app. And that, you know, you have to have allow alternate software installation sources.
Of course.
Because it's not from the store. And see, a lot of these Humble apps are not in the Play Store.
Right.
I don't know. It might be all of them.
Interesting.
And so if you get this Humble Bundle app, then it gives you a UI to access your Humble Bundle library, just very basic.
Okay.
And I can see everything that I've bought from previous bundles as well as this bundle, and then one tap to download, one tap to install.
Oh, and I love that. Yeah, and it's right, really easy to
– Yeah, it's very
– It's kind of hard to see it here, but it's real tidy.
Yeah. You know,
if it's installed, it's got a green launch, and if it's not, it's a gray.
Yeah. And you can see, just if I just tap one thing, there's a little download. It'll let you go about and continue to use the Android device while it downloads in the background. It just gives you a little notification when it's ready.
Looks good.
It's a very easy way to just get access to any of the Humble Bundle.
They've got some pretty cool games.
And I would assume any new bundles that come out will also show up in there.
I would imagine so.
I don't know for sure.
Looks good, though.
Good. Yeah. All right, Matt. So that is my Android pick, the Humble Bundle 5 for Android. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. And it is only available for, 9 days?
9 days? That's not too bad.
So you got time.
Gives you some time to, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, Matt, we always got to just take a quick peek here at the how the
stats,
platforms
the,
are doing.
The famed stats. Who's rocking
what? Let's see what we got here. Looks like... Linux is representing pretty well. Linux has got a good share relative to the users. The average Linux price, $9.49.
Still higher than everybody else.
Average Mac, $7.45. Average Windows, $6.10. The average being $6.65 because there's so many cheapo Windows users.
Of course.
But Linux overall still paying the most. And like the Humble Bundle folks have said, you know, they end up representing a good 20, 25, 30% of their earnings.
And so it keeps them interested in making that happen. What's interesting is that the Linux folks are willing to spend more money. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah. As well, I think it's played a role in getting more
Huge.
And more games over.
Oh, definitely.
Okay. Now, I want to tell you about an app that I have used for years on and off to collaborate with other people I'm working with.
Okay.
Kind of reminds you probably a little bit of Google Docs or Etherpad, which is something else we've covered that is great. And this is one that I found out because I did a little research to find out what some open source projects were using to do their collaborative note taking.
Okay.
And I found that both the Ubuntu project and the Fedora project use an app called Gobi.
Gobi.
And Gobi is an editor that is really built around collaborative real-time editing at the same time. And it's got some really nice features like chat built in. You can run your own, host your own server. It's got a native client. So here's a little demo for you video users, viewers. Here is the Gobi client. And I'm just going to connect to their public server. But, you know,
Just to kind of get an idea.
As a demo, right?
Sure.
But you would have, like, we could have, like, you know, gobi.jupiterbroadcasting.com.
So we can pretend like we're hosting our own.
Yeah.
Sure.
And you can see everybody's created these different folders here. And I can go in here and I can open up different notes.
And
one of the things that you notice right away is there's a list of active users here. And each user is assigned their own color.
So I can
see where in the document different people have added. Now, it looks like, you know, one of the green guys did all of the work on this particular file. It kind of depends, you know, everything's a little different. But they have syntax highlighting support, which is really nice if you're doing a little collaborative code writing.
And it looks like you got some IRC chat there below.
Yep, nice. Built-in chat down here below so you can talk to people. And you've got main channel chat as well as individual docs. Wow. And you see I'm still in these other docs. So you have multiple tabs at the same time. So you can be working. What I used this for was documentation. But you absolutely could use this for script writing or anything like that or show notes.
And you could really get into multitasking. It looks like that's really tidy.
We would have, you know, each folder would be like we'd have servers, workstations, network gear, you know, web, different folders. Then you'd go in there and you'd say, okay, well, I'm going to work on the switch one. And so I could have all the switches open and I could be double checking like firmware versions and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and I also noticed that as you tap each tab, your user list actually changes. So it represents
the user
users for that particular doc. That's really nice. That's not just, you know, random.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so like the other thing that's nice about this is all of this is being written to the server.
So
I can just disconnect and I don't lose any of my changes.
Right. You don't have to worry about any local saving. It's already taken care of.
So you get the benefit of collaborative editing a la Google Docs with the niceties of a local native application that you can run the server yourself. There it is. So it's Gobi, G-O-B-B-Y. It's probably available in your repo. They have a really, really crazy URL, so I'm not going to give it out on air, but I have a link to it in the show notes. They have a couple different versions out. I thought I was running version 5, but that actually there says I'm running maybe 4.9.
That could just be what was in the repo, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. So anyways, G-O-B-B-Y, and I've used it on and off for years. The Canonical guys use it. The Fedora guys use it, and I really have enjoyed it. And the multiple colors is nice because you always know, well, who did what?
Exactly. It's like, no, where did I change what again? And you got to scroll up and down. This way you can just glance quickly and say, oh, yeah, there it is. That's what I worked on.
Yeah.
Cool.
Matt, before we jump into the news, and we have some pretty fun news to get into, I wanted to follow up. It was like it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think it was our Runs Linux, the Chromebook Pixel.
Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks ago.
And both of us were like, Chromebook.
Yeah.
And, well, of course, then Linus had to go publicly make arses of us and announce that not only is he using a Chromebook on his Google Plus page, but that he's loving it.
Well, he's a big MacBook Air guy, and so I can see that form factor appealing to him.
Yeah, in fact, I think in one of his posts, he said, in fact, here's what he says. And it's got a beautiful screen to the point where I suspect I'll make it my primary laptop. I tend to like laptops slightly smaller, but I think I can lug around this 1.5 kilogram monster despite feeling fairly strongly that a laptop should weigh 1 kilogram or less. So he's definitely a light, thin laptop guy.
Yeah, definitely.
I find this to be interesting. I think, and he goes on to say too, that Chrome OS isn't horrible, but running, you know, he's going to want to run like a real Linux distribution at some point.
He's going to want more power.
I don't know if I still think, you know, I'm looking at the Chrome. I don't think I retract my statement. You know, when you add it with LTE, and since this is mostly an online device, you almost have to have it with LTE. You're $1,500.
Yeah, it's
base
a little.
You're stuck at
a little high for me for what you're getting. Especially
you're stuck at 4 gigs of RAM too.
Yeah,
but I think this does say that there really is a good market out there for a thin, light, portable Linux machine.
Yeah, there's definitely a demand for it. I don't doubt that for any question at all, none whatsoever.
What if they use Xorg on that Chromebook Pixel?
I do not know how that works.
I know they're using Upstart, but
yeah, they might be using their own thing. Who knows?
Yeah.
With Google, you never really know what they're doing.
I bet it's X.
I'm sure it is.
Everybody uses X, Matt. That'd be crazy.
They've been using it for 30-some-odd years.
That's crazy. You know,
little patch here, little patch there.
Yeah. Everything's fine.
Yeah,
they just got touch support, Matt. Multi-touch that. All right, Matt. Well, let's do the news.
Hey, It's the news, and this show is brought to you by
Ting.com, Matt. Yes, of course, Ting.com, new sponsors to the program. Yes. And I'm really excited because we've been hearing from folks like Spike here. He said, I bit the bullet and bought a phone from Ting.com. I went big and got the Samsung Galaxy Note 2. Based on the listed plan price, you know, I'll be saving a boatload of money even after paying out of hand for the device. I'll be writing again with a future assessment on the service and my phablet. Nice. And he has great service in his area. You know what I did?
What'd you do?
I decided I wanted to go big, too. I like here, like Spike, wanted to get myself a really nice Ting device. And I decided to get myself the Note 2. I sold off some Bitcoins, wow, and I ordered myself a Note 2. So I should have that next week on the show.
Oh, man.
Now,
nice.
If you're new to the show and you don't know, you know, what is Ting? Ting is mobile that makes sense. It's no BS mobile service. And I am a happy new customer of Ting. Now, Ting is an MVNO. They're a reseller of Nationwide Sprint Network. So if you've got good Sprint coverage, guess what? You're going to have great Ting service. The other thing I love about Ting, no contracts.
Oh, love that.
Yeah, I'm done with contracts. Also, no overage or penalties. If you use more than you thought you would, you just pay more for what you need. And here's the kicker I really love. Not only do they have some really great plans, Matt, but you know what? If it turns out maybe you overbought, maybe you don't need as many minutes as you thought you did, Ting will credit you what you didn't use on your next bill and automatically drop you down to your next plan.
Love that feature. That's the feature that really stands out to me personally. That's awesome.
I love that they have a mix and match, so you don't just have to buy a single package. You can say, you know what? I need 100 minutes of phone service. I need zero text messages because I use Google Voice, but give me the data.
So you can build your plan a la carte.
Of course, the data plan, you know, includes hotspot and tethering, which is awesome. And there's going to be no mysterious lines on your bill other than just your local taxes. No surprises. Nothing slipped in there. And they have excellent support online. And if you call them, just give them a call, 1-855-TING-FTW, and you'll get a person if you call between business hours on the East Coast.
A real person.
A real person,
A real Matt. Person. Another win.
And if you go over to last.ting.com, last.ting.com, you'll save $25 off your first device or $25 towards a credit.
Oh, God. I love that.
So I think all said and done, my new Ting plan is like $33 a month. And what's awesome about that is I brought my own phone.
Right.
So I got the $25 service credit. So basically, I'm paying like nothing for my first months of credit, my first months of service. And then when I get the Note 2, you know, I'm just going to add it to the account. I just call up, I add it to the account, or I go to their webpage, boom, Bob's your uncle. It's all done. So thanks to Ting.com for sponsoring this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. And support the show by visiting last.ting.com and save some money on your new device. We've gotten lots and lots of emails. We've had a thread in the subreddit. People are loving Ting. They're trying it
out. Makes sense.
Really makes me happy to hear
good
that.
Stuff.
So thank you, everybody.
Yes.
All right, Matt, what do you say we start with a little KDE news this week?
Let's get into the KDE.
All right. So KDE launches something that I think is a great idea, monthly updates for version 4.10 of KDE.
Yeah.
Starting this week, they released updates for workspaces, applications, and the development platform. These updates are a first in series of monthly stabilization updates to the 4.10 series of KDE with over 100 bug fixes in this
one. I like
one.
That. So basically, the focus of these things is basically to provide a more stable experience versus a more cutting edge.
That's maybe so. Refining.
Seems to be. A more refining. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I can see that.
So the official latest version of KDE is now 4.10.1.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go check that out and go grab that at a distro near you. And congrats. You know, KDE project, KDE 4.10, finest release of KDE I've ever used. And to then just iterate and refine on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Loves it.
I like it.
This is a little bit of good news for us content creators out there, but also for end users who just want a painless video experience on Android or Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Great news for VP8, a.k.a. WebM.
Ooh.
Today, Google, this was on March 7th, announced that they went into a licensing agreement with the MPEG LA consortium, which is officially ending MPEG LA's efforts to go after VP8 from a patent troll standpoint.
Good.
Yeah. Well, essentially, MPEG LA was sort of forming a pool of patents to challenge VP8, and they had filed some initial papers, and it looked like a lawsuit was going to move ahead. But there was 11 patent owners that granted license to Google, which now allows Google to sublicense any technologies and techniques that are made using VP8. Mm-hmm. Now, here there is a little bit of a trick.
Mm-hmm.
In order to be covered by this patent, I guess, indemnification, it must be a version of VP8 that's based off of Google's lib VPX, or it must follow the VP8 data format specification put out by Google. If you do one of those two things, you'll be protected from patent suits. And it also, Google went ahead and sublicensed one additional iteration, so another version of WebM.
Huh.
So they're not only covered for this version, but the next following
well,
iteration.
Well, that's good. That's good. I I wish we didn't live in that world where all this nonsense was necessary, but, you know, at least we have some options. So that's good.
Yeah. You know, I agree. I think WebM's kind of a substandard codec, I think, especially compared to X264. I'm not impressed. X264, though, could have its own patent issues. However, it is open source as well.
Yes.
And, you know, it's something open source. And now that WebM has been cleared of these potential elephant in the room patents, I hope it'll move forward a little more aggressively. It'll improve a little more, and then it'll become something that's comparable to X.
I think it will. I think we'll actually see some development there. So that's good. That's good.
Now, okay. So we're keeping all of the news Ubuntu free since the next segment's going to be all about Ubuntu, right?
Yep, that was
our goal. But we're moving quickly because we have a lot of things to cover.
Yep.
But something that's going to be beneficial to all Linux users, of course, is a brand new version of the Linux kernel. Version 3.9's features have been established. Here's the one I like as an SSD user, and maybe you might out there as well. Linux 3.9 will include a cache target in the device mapper that will allow SSDs to be used as hard disk cache in order to offer accelerated access to frequently used data or to temporarily store write operations to the faster SSD. So if you're tracking what one of the things Apple's recently introduced with their Macintosh computers that run the OS X Macintosh operating system, is they have like something called Fusion Drive.
Right. I've heard of that. Yeah. The Fusion. Yep.
I think this is kind of like that, where you write to the SSD for the more frequently accessed stuff, and then you kind of maybe potentially age less accessed stuff to the larger, slower spinning medium.
I like that. I like the functionality of that. So if they're able to pull this off successfully, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be really curious to see how that could work, because you could do the ideal setup where you have, you get the largest SSD you can afford that is, the right size for you, whatever that might be, and then you get the largest spinning drive you can afford.
Big old cheapo spinning guy. Yeah. Bam, right there. Yep.
The other thing, I don't know for sure that's what it's going to be used for, because the other thing it could be used for is more like how ZFS does it, where ZFS sort of just uses it to write like the journal and a lot of things it has to do really, really, really fast, and then it almost immediately moves everything to the final storage destination. So I'm not.
It could go that direction. Hopefully they'll go the first way. But,
The other thing that's really great to see, and this isn't too surprising, but I think it's just good to note because it's not always been like this. Linux kernel 3.9 will also offer driver for the 7000 Wi-Fi components that Intel's working on right now. And the reason why I want to pull this out is because we don't even have a release date yet for these Wi-Fi chips. Probably June is what Intel's targeting, as well as like the Haswell components. And I love the fact that Linux has now reached the point where we've got the driver for the Wi-Fi chip 3-4 months before it even ships.
Compared to looking with a year later, 3-year-old driver technology.
Having to use the Windows driver,
NDIS wrapper.
So it's really it's great to see that we're at that point.
Well, now, just in general, today's existing kernels, I'm surprised, even just from kernel to kernel, the stability is getting better.
Yeah.
I'm noticing that it's like, oh wow, I'm getting less drops, I'm getting less garbage, less noise. It's pretty good.
I haven't had really haven't had many issues. The Wi-Fi on the Spinobo is incredible too, and I really haven't had a kernel update that's caused me any issues for a long time either.
No, I've been pretty happy with it.
So next week, I think we'll do our OpenSUSE 12.3 release.
Oh,
because I just want to give a reminder to folks, 3 days as of this recording until OpenSUSE 12.3 comes out. Mm-hmm. It's going to feature E17. It's going to feature KDE 4.10, GNOME Shell 3.6. Just missed GNOME 3.8.
But that's good. I support support
focus on stability, right?
Absolutely.
Plus they have like the gallery where you can find a lot of the latest GNOME spins and stuff based on OpenSUSE. So we'll probably give this a full run through on the next week's episode of the Linux Action Show, but I just go prepare your torrent client so that way you can help seed.
Yes.
For the brief time that I've played with this release so far, I mean really brief time, like one evening. Beautiful KDE 4.10 implementation.
Yeah, KDE's really sexed it up lately. Yeah. I've got to say it's attractive.
Yeah, so if you want to experience what I think is KDE's best release on what is likely to be one of the best implementations of it, I think 12.3 is the one you're going to check out. OpenSUSE 12.3.
That's a big statement. Okay.
What, 3 days from now? So go find it. And we'll have a link to the landing page where you'll be able to find the download links when it's ready. So they will update this wiki page with those. And then,
I love the fact that you've got everything from the super uber lightweight desktops all the way up to the more robust and some might even say bloated KDE. Cool.
Yeah, nice thing about KDE is you can just kind of dial it down.
You can.
Especially now, you can kind of dial it down.
But for people like me that like to, I like to squish flies with a sledgehammer, I'll just probably pick the desktop that works best for the individual machine.
You're an XFCE LXDE guy.
I am. Yeah.
And then one last little note we wanted to touch on. A lot of us have heard about some of these conferences that have been going on, mm-hmm. but we can't obviously attend all of them.
That's true.
The Embedded Linux conference just wrapped up a little bit ago, and they've posted all their videos online. A couple of interesting keynotes that you could catch. Google self-driving cars talk.
Oh, wow. Now that would be cool.
There was a panel discussion. Is Android the new embedded Linux? No, it is not
going to happen.
And working together to accelerate Linux development was another panel discussion, one of their keynote talks. But there was a bunch of other really... really good stuff. So links to all of that.
And the video for each one of those.
Yep.
I like that.
Yep.
And they even segment them down to technical session to more just project stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Like, look at all this good stuff here.
There's tons of it. I could spend a day just watching this.
So, and you know, the thing is because they're all like this and there's a big dump, the media never goes through all this stuff.
No.
So a lot of the stuff is little nuggets that just goes in there that nobody ever hears about unless they go watch it for themselves. But if you got a little time to kill and you want to go do that, we'll have a link to that in the show notes over at linuxgizmos.com.
Yes, we will.
Name. That's a good name.
Good name. Like it.
All right, Matt. Well, that's all the news for this week. Okay, Mr. Matt. Now, I'm excited because we have Carl Rochelle from System 76, the CEO, joining us on the line. Hey, Carl. Welcome to the Linux Action Show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for being here on a Sunday morning. We wanted to bring you in because the Ubuntu news this week has obviously been huge. I'm sure it's been a crazy week for you guys, and we've been watching the community reaction just blow up. And honestly, I wanted to hear your take on it as a hardware provider who's building a product around Ubuntu. So you're sort of in this position in the ecosystem where you depend very much on the Ubuntu operating system releases, and they're talking about making some big changes there, and not just in their release type, but all across the board. So there's a lot of changes that are going to affect folks like System 76, folks like Dell and HP, and all of the other manufacturers out there. So I thought it'd be great to get your perspective on this stuff. I wanted to ask you as we got rolling here, if there's any point, you know, if we feel like we're missing something, you just go ahead and toss it in there. But I thought maybe we'd save the rolling release stuff towards the end of the conversation. Does that work for you?
That sounds good to me.
Okay, cool. Well, let's start with one of the first things that is announced and kind of been glossed over this week is they're talking about rewriting Unity to Qt. And this would obviously be a big change. I would be maybe a little worried we'd be talking about starting over from scratch in some sense.
That's been my concern.
But then again, great for long-term technological platform building, right? You're going to be able to have richer applications. They're going to be able to fit across multiple device screen sizes and things like that. Carl, what's your take on sort of as somebody who's shipping a product, when you have something like Unity that's been getting better and better? I mean, we have 13.04 now. 13.04's Unity is the best Unity we've ever had. Are you concerned that from a product standpoint, this is going to affect you because maybe the quality is going to go down while they're making this transition?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a positive move in the right direction. I think Canonical and the Ubuntu development community have a strong history of making wise decisions when it comes to what they develop and what tools they use to develop with. Unity moving to Qt it makes sense to me because they need to be able to scale from a phone all the way up into a desktop, all the way up into a television. And Qt and QML enable them to do that. And I think that's an important part of their bigger picture. I think you guys were talking about Linus and him using the new Pixie Google Chromebook. And one of the issues with a 15-inch laptop with a resolution that high is that Ubuntu doesn't scale for that.
Oh, right.
So everything is, Linus loves his text tiny, but most folks, that's a little bit too small.
We can't
do a 2550 15.6 inch laptop. It's just too small.
Right.
But we'd love to have that pixel density.
Sure.
And that pixel density means being able to scale Ubuntu so that you can take advantage of all those pixels without making things really tiny. It's kind of a different way of looking at how resolutions work. It's the pixel density versus the size of the text. So I think overall, it's I trust the decisions they make. I'm sure it's a fantastic one, and we'll take it and make great stuff out of it.
Yeah, you know, I know from talking on my other show, Coda Radio, and with developers, Qt is absolutely a good move, but it does kind of feel like yet another transition, but probably one for the best. I think the one that is maybe was announced at the same time and perhaps potentially a little more upsetting for the open source community at large is the announcement that they're going to write their own display server. They're sort of saying, no, thank you to Wayland. Here we are 5 years after Wayland was announced. Nothing shipped yet, so we're going to write Mir. When you look at the scope of what Canonical has to pull off for writing their own display server, it maybe seems like the biggest challenge that they would have ever faced development-wise.
That's a huge challenge.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, whether it's the biggest thing they faced?
I mean, I think about the scope of a display server. It seems It seems monstrous.
Well, maybe. It depends what you need to do with it, right? I think part of their problem is that they have a very focused direction. SIM76 has had this issue itself, actually, in trying to make these type of decisions. When we built System76.com, where we're going to rebuild it, we wanted to do certain things that the existing technology didn't do. We looked at Magento and OS Commerce and Zen Cards, and we looked at every platform that was out there and available to us. I didn't want to invest in building a brand new shopping system.
Right.
But we had to integrate customer service. We had to integrate sales. We had to integrate technical support. For us to operate efficiently, we need to integrate all those things so that we have a single platform to serve our customers. We didn't find anything out there that we could contribute to. And the end result was a decision to just write something from scratch from the ground up. And with today's agile development and the languages that are available to us and the tools that are available, sometimes it's actually faster to not have this, you know, all this wrapping around, trying to plug your solution into someone else's solution. Sometimes it's faster actually just building your own solution.
So I don't necessarily disagree with that statement, but in this case, it looks like potentially the technical justifications for using Mir over Wayland might have been slightly inaccurate, which I think has led some people in the community to conclude that maybe Canonical isn't using the best judgment and doesn't have all the information available to them before they went off and launched their own display server. Mm-hmm. I would propose that potentially it's more about having control over the display server because, and I think this is something you could speak to, at the end of the day, Ubuntu and Canonical wants to ship an end-to-end product. And they want to say, okay, today we have it on tablets that have 7-inch screens and 10-inch screens and desktops. But next month or next quarter, we know that these 4K resolution tablets are going to come out. And we want to be able to rev our Mir display server in the next release to support 4K. We don't want to have to wait and submit a patch to Wayland and then wait for Wayland to integrate it in 3 years, right? They need to be able to move within a quarter, within a month. Yeah. And I think people are potentially undervaluing that flexibility in their ability to deliver. And I was wondering, do you think, as somebody who also takes a product or takes Ubuntu and then builds an entire product around it, are you concerned that this is going to maybe make your systems incompatible with other Linux desktop applications? Or do you think this is sort of like a good move for System76 because they're going to give you a unique product that the other Linux distros won't have for potentially a little while? Where do you fall down on this? And do you think maybe Canonical is jumping the gun a little bit?
Well, I think that's a fantastic point, actually. I know Canonical has had some history and some trouble when they wanted to put indicator patch into GNOME.
Right, exactly. Right?
Or notify OSD, you know, those type of patches. And that does gum up the works. And when you do have to make business decisions that say, this is central to how we operate or what we want to create, and therefore we do need to have control over it. But I can't fault anyone for creating something. I particularly can't fault anyone for creating something and then open sourcing it.
Right, GPL3 in this case.
That's the nature of what we do. Everything that we create at some point is going to be replaced with something better. Mm-hmm. Or different, not necessarily better, but it's all going to be replaced. Otherwise, we're not progressing. So I think that makes more sense if we can react faster, mm-hmm. and we can move amongst the hardware ecosystem more fluidly. That gives me an opportunity to build more products with Ubuntu, and that's positive.
Right. Yeah. Because you could sell potentially a desktop laptop or a desktop and a tablet combo system that could almost share a lot of the same code, and that would be great for you from like a support and implementation standpoint.
Yeah.
I guess I find it funny because I think. And again, if you think I'm wrong on any of this, just tell me why. But I look at, I think Canonical gets a lot of crap for Upstart, their use of Upstart in Ubuntu. And everybody, they should be using systemd. Systemd is used in Arch. Systemd is used in OpenSUSE. Systemd is going to be used in CentOS and in Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Systemd. But when the reality is that Upstart's been around for the last two long-term support releases. Chrome OS uses Upstart. The current shipped version of Red Hat Enterprise uses Upstart. And the reason they use Upstart is because the code was available. The code was there. Systemd's code wasn't there, and Systemd's code is just now finally shipping. You're just going to see OpenSUSE 12.3 will complete their transition to Systemd, for example. And now here we are, in almost sort of the same circumstance where everybody's on their case for not using Wayland. How dare they not use Wayland? And if I recall, and I could be wrong, but my recollection was is Wayland wasn't a blip on anyone's radar until Shuttleworth came out and said, Ubuntu will use Wayland in 2010 or 2011. And then Wayland really got on the radar. And I think one of the reasons people are upset is because all of a sudden we had this pivot from Canonical without any previous announcement that they're shipping their own product. And the response from the open source community, when you take something that's sort of been started and drop it on them, is generally met, you know, with a lot of outcry, and it has in this case. And I would argue that the avenue they're setting themselves down is going to result in almost a hemorrhaging of contributors. You know, we've seen a lot of public posts in this last week about people that are leaving the Ubuntu project, or Ubuntu's no longer for me. We even had people, is Ubuntu a Linux distribution anymore? And if they sort of hemorrhage these contributors, the end result will be less people when they need it the most to create apps for these phones, to rewrite Unity and Qt, to port things over to Mir. This is when they need people the absolute most, and they seem to be sort of in a no-win situation because they need to do something because Wayland isn't delivering. I mean, yeah, you can get it on Rebecca Black Linux, and yeah, you can try it in a few places, but you can't minimize or maximize yet. There's no OpenGL support yet. Right. So they can't really go with Wayland, but yet they're getting flamed for going with Mir, and the end result could be a starved project. And does that give you concern as somebody who's basing their whole business around that?
No.
So you're pretty confident it's going to work out.
We are all passionate about what we do. That's the beauty about being part of this open source community. That's what's fantastic about the work that we do. When I think about open source development, this is how I envision it. Okay. All right. There's a guy that's in his basement and he's looking at open source software because he can see all the code and he sees how it works. Okay, he imagines a better way to create it. He says, I think I could do this better. So he spends a year yakking at his keyboard and building something better. And now we have UDEV. And he says, hey, guys, look, I made this. It's better.
Right.
And the community says, you know what? We have something. We're using it already. This is crap. And go away. He goes back to his basement. He says, no, I think this really is better. And he starts yakking at it for another year. And then he comes back and he says, this is better, guys. And then if it is, it'll be picked up. But it takes time. It takes effort. This is the nature of creative destruction.
I like that.
It's like an organism that sort of like comes up and eats the old organism that used to be in its place.
Yeah,
and then
I like that. Yeah. Nature hates a vacuum.
Well, it's frustrating. It's a process, and there is a difference when it comes to Canonical and Ubuntu because they have a very popular distribution, and they can say we built something and we're going to use it, and a lot of people are going to see it, and because a lot of people are going to see it, if you want your stuff to be seen, then you're probably going to need the support. I think real friction is there. The real friction isn't maybe creating something; it's that people say, well, Ubuntu's the size it is, so now they can.
Now I have to bother with this, and I had no intention of having to bother with this.
Right, and I can certainly understand some frustration around that. I mean, that makes sense to me. But
yeah,
ultimately, we look at the tools that are available to us. We look at the users that we want to reach. We look at what we want Linux and open source to be, and we take the good and the bad, and we build things.
Now, I wonder, though, I think one of the major concerns that I've heard echoed in a lot of comment threads and mail posts is, well, what if Mir goes out there and Canonical creates relationships with NVIDIA and ATI, and we get drivers for Mir, but we don't get drivers for Wayland? Because, in fact, NVIDIA has actually stated in 2010, publicly, they have no interest in Wayland. Now, that was probably likely going to change, but I think there's a concern that maybe Canonical might embrace and extend the display server in such a way that sort of locks people into Mir. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think the driver model that they're going to use is the same as Google's because it's been adopted. And if that's that being the case,
the one then, for Surface Flinger,
right? Maybe there simply needs to be X is notoriously difficult for driver development and management. I think there's a better model out there, then it's something that would be welcomed by anyone.
Yeah. In fact, it sounded like from the wiki post that that they're working with NVIDIA to sort of create an agnostic driver model to really move the driver out of the display server as it should be. It shouldn't really be in the display server to begin with, but it's there because the licensing of the kernel. But they're talking about creating some sort of agnostic one. That it'd be funny if the actual result of Mir, and I think this could be the tangible result, is we'll actually get proprietary drivers for Wayland. I actually think that could be the result of this, is because Canonical will reach out and get NVIDIA to create drivers so that way video games work under Mir and things like that. And then they'll do it in such a way that Wayland will probably be able to take advantage of it. So it seems like to me we actually – now, I think them creating Mir is crazy. I think it is way more work than they have any idea. But if they can pull it off, more power to them, because we might actually have something shipping that we can all use. It'll be GPL3 based. And wouldn't it be ironic if in 2 years we're all using Mir, and this is Canonical's huge contribution back to the community. People are always giving them a hard time for not contributing upstream. Well, if they build us a display server and it's GPL3 – that might be their job. I mean, maybe that's what they'll end up contributing back, and I'm all for that because they've got some serious skin in the game to actually make sure that thing works right.
I don't think it's – just one thing I got to chime in is I don't think it's a mistake. I think it's overdue.
Yeah?
I think it's way overdue. Wayland is – you got to hold up a stick just to see it move.
It's kind of a joke. So, I mean, Wayland's been like in our predictions episode for 5 years.
Yeah, so Ubuntu's saying, look, that's great. That's cute. We're moving on with our lives. We're going to take control of this. And by the way, we're going to throw the source code at everybody that wants it. So why is anyone really complaining? That's what I've never really been able to wrap my head around. I don't understand what the concern is.
Right.
Other than if Ubuntu struggles with it, that's Ubuntu's issue. That doesn't affect the rest of the community. I don't see why folks are so up in arms about it. I really don't.
I think they're worried about division of labor and incompatibilities, but I think they're thinking of things in old terms.
Okay,
you know, I think people are thinking of X, and you know, they need to
just really accept the fact that it's happening.
Yeah, the idea that we should redo something, I think, is false. We all learn, we get better at what we do.
Sure.
We redo things and we change things all the time. That's how we progress.
Exactly.
That's why we're so vibrant as a community, because we create so many things. We have so many ideas. You can see all the code. You can try it. You can do it. You can try something. Try to build something better.
Right.
Such great collaboration. You know,
it's an asset for us.
Absolutely.
The fact that many moons ago, I thought having KDE and GNOME and why wouldn't it be better if all these people work together?
Right.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that anymore. I think we should all pursue our own creation, and if it's markets and other people will decide whether they like what we like. But that's not what's most important. Is we're doing what we love to do.
Exactly, the passion's there, and you're focused on what you're passionate about. Yeah.
So Wayland, go after it.
Sure.
Do it. Okay. It's if you can build something better, I think Canonical would pick it up.
And that's a good point.
It's a smart thing to do. I mean, you might have a good point with the patch thing. I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
But go after your passions.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, now let's talk about something that came out this week that has sort of been bubbling on and off for a little while. I know internally at Canonical it's been in conversations for even longer, and that is the announcement of potentially switching to rolling release. And Canonical did something kind of interesting. They had these, I think they called them straw man proposals drawn up, where they said, all right, we have a couple of ideas what we could do. Let's draw up the proposals and let's have everybody poke holes at them. Now, this caused a lot of people that came out and said, well, wait a minute, if Ubuntu switches to a rolling release, that's going to impact me. Now, somebody sort of like yourself, I blanked on his name here, but it's on – oh, Ben Collins. Ben Collins wrote a post. He works at Servigy, I think, Servigy. They're creating a PowerPC port of Ubuntu to empower their hardware platform, the CTS-1000, and they've been working on it for 2 years now in development, okay? And he goes on to say that they've been planning to ship it with 13.04. Have it ported over to PowerPC, but now with 13.04 kind of going in question, if we're even going to see a 13.04 release, and then switching to rolling, he doesn't even know how to incorporate that into his product, because it's a hardware device that sits on a shelf that runs an embedded PowerPC processor that he was intending to sell to customers as a complete package, and now he's saying, well, wait a minute, guys, if you're going to rolling release, how do I package that? How do I productize that? How do I sell that and then provide support for that? And that's got to be an issue that System76 is struggling with too. How does rolling release impact you, and what are your concerns or thoughts there?
Well, I think first there was some difficulty because there was an air of inevitability to this. So after reading the post and then hearing and then watching a Ubuntu on Air video last Friday where they discussed this, there's a certain feel, and then seeing the UDS track with every hour having something about how do we move to rolling release.
Right.
There's this very much a feel and air to inevitability that this is what's happening. And we became concerned. We're not concerned about rolling development. rolling, I think after the discussions this week, what we've learned is that rolling release isn't really a release. If we can't ship it on a product because it's not trusted and users can't necessarily use it, it would be like us shipping raring today.
Right.
It would be irresponsible.
Yeah.
Right.
But you have argued the LTS is too old. In fact, you've even argued the LTS should die, so you can't really ship that either.
I think that I think LTS is an old idea. I think every argument for old LTS is a failure in some other part of the system. Mm-hmm. Either we don't trust upgrades, or we don't want our systems to change.
Right.
Servers. That's a pretty big deal in servers, is they don't want. I'm sure, like for System 76, you guys must ship a much more LTS on the server than you do the latest release, right?
Well, servers, consider it, it's not that they don't want it to change, it's that they don't want them to break.
Right, yes.
And those are two different things.
Yeah.
When we install a security patch, we don't really even know what's happening. We know the kernel is being updated, our system is changing.
Yeah.
So long as it doesn't break, we're fine with it.
Right.
And that's why LTS is an old idea. If releases aren't breaking things, then why not be on what is the latest and greatest software instead of using old software? I know there are a lot of other LTS arguments. I'm not very good at making them because I've never really liked the idea.
Right, because from your standpoint, in 2 years, the Linux desktop is very old. And, if I bought a laptop that had the last version of LTS on it, it would seem ancient.
We'd be shipping 11.04 today.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And some people have called that an unfair characterization because it's 11.04 wasn't very good or something like that. But I think it's actually a compliment. I think Ubuntu progresses and open source progresses so quickly that when 14.04 comes back, we'll look at 12.04 and say, wow, look how far we've come.
Now,
but we don't see it as much because we install all the iterative releases and that's what we ship.
Yeah, I do notice it, like when I go back and watch old shows from a couple of years ago, it really does jump out how much it's changed.
Amazing, right?
Yeah, it really is. Now, what about the market advantage for a company like specifically System 76? Because unlike some of the bigger guys, you guys are really in the thick of it. I mean, you're attending some of these UDS sessions. You're watching this from a very close level. So you might be in more of a position than, say, a larger company because you might be able to somehow take that rolling release and offer some sort of stability path for average users to say, we're shipping with rolling releases, but we're snapshotting on a weekly basis and doing a test build and then deploying it. And maybe you like launch your own repos or something like that. But it seems like you could almost build a solution around the rolling release to offer something of stability to standard users. So it could almost be like a market competitive advantage System 76 could have down the road. Is that likely, or would that just be a massive undertaking that would, almost be impossible?
I can't stand the idea of two Ubuntus.
Because that's what I think it would turn into. Well, although for servers, though, I got to wonder if maybe something like that would be a snapshot situation might be plausible just in case something did break. Rolling release can happen.
Those are management tools.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? That's virtualization and KVM and those management tools for when something breaks, you can roll it back.
True.
Two Ubuntu releases occurring at the same time. Right. That's which one do you install? Which one do I sell? Which one do I offer? We know that the rolling release isn't a rolling release anyway, so I have to offer the LTS release, and then I have to sell the features of the LTS release because people that ordered that wouldn't have the features of the rolling release.
Right.
I see lots of confusion. I don't like the idea of two releases occurring at the same time. We have a product that is Ubuntu. That's what we ship. Mm-hmm. We want to ship it rapidly.
Now Shuttleworth has actually taken to his blog, and he said, I'm not so convinced by the rolling release idea. Maybe we should actually just release more often, like a quarterly release or something like that. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that, Carl?
That sounds fantastic. Let's move faster.
So move faster, but keep it a release.
Yeah. Keep it something that you can confidently support. Another thing about rolling release, we will have... if we ship only LTS and it only comes out every 2 years, we will have users that inevitably use the rolling release. And being a company that loves fresh software, I can't imagine us saying, you know, we can't test that because it's moving every day.
Right.
We can only support this one, but we're going to end up supporting it anyway because too many of our users are possibly installing.
Right. I mean, I'm already running 1304 on my Bonobo.
Right. And
you shipped it to me with 1210.
We don't support that.
Right. Right. But see, that's really how it is, though, right? Yeah. I honestly, if today they gave me a repo that I could have daily builds, I would actually
add it.
That'd
be tempting. That would be tempting. Yeah.
So I kind of, as a user, I kind of want it, but as somebody who like has to support software as my day job, and as someone who understands there's a lot of people have to release things, it seems like a really tough spot.
The big difference is you can run Raring right now and you know that 1304 is coming and we're going to support it fully in April, in a couple of months.
Right.
What if that was a year and a half from now? That your OEM isn't going to support what you're running for a year and a half. And if you want the new Rhythm Box, or you want the new Empathy, or you want something new, you can't have it unless there's a huge backporting effort that
right.
goes on.
Or you switch your system to rolling and then do massive upgrades, which would like to break.
Right.
And we can't. And how well can we support that as a company? I don't know the answer. I'm actually willing to give it a try. But I don't, I think that's, it's going to be challenging.
Yeah. It seems like it's a big question mark for OEMs that
it sounds exciting though. I mean, at best, I mean, it's like, hey, you know, it's a new frontier. Dip our toes in it, you know.
But
there are good things about that, right? Yeah. If we could provide the latest software, no, it's always stable, and give that to our users and commercially support that, we'd be all about it. Well, so yeah, I'm for moving faster.
I guess my last question for you would be is, you know, I one of the reasons I bought my Bonobo Extreme was because I wanted to play Steam video games and I wanted to play them really good, and I feel like Canonical is at a point now where they have Valve coming on board. Mm. They have Lightworks coming on board. Every other Kickstarter game has Ubuntu support. Unity 3D now supports directly porting to Ubuntu. I mean, they have never been in a better position to grab some desktop market and to get big applications.
Yeah.
And here we are. We've arrived. And guess what? We're pushing the reset button. Doesn't that give you a little bit of pause?
Well, I think it's the nature of open source discussion and different ideas and what happens when you put a group of people together to think about things. I think what I'm not concerned about is them making the right choice. Ultimately, I trust them to do that. This is the first time in 7 years that I felt compelled to come out and really give our position on something. Otherwise, it has happened in 7 years. That's a fantastic track record for a company that's tied to the hip of Ubuntu, mm-hmm. which you are. We've released products. We've had 15 Ubuntu releases on time on day zero. So that's normal for us. Right. It's not normal for us to release an operating system every 2 years. I think I'd get bored, frankly.
Right.
We like this thing moving. And I think maybe that's even one of the reasons that the desktop, you know, the traditional desktop is being challenged, is that mobile is moving quickly and desktop is slowing down.
Yeah.
Let's keep this thing going.
Yeah. I wonder if we won't see things almost reach, Canonical's been calling it web time. Which I think is kind of interesting.
That's an interesting term.
People just expect applications on the web to be self-updated. I would say there is some logic there. It is starting to become, you know, you just iterate, build, mm-hmm. build, and deploy. Although sometimes people don't like that either. You know?
Some people don't, but I think that we've become used to it and we've become complacent about it and actually have found ourselves expecting it.
Maybe.
I want it yesterday. I don't want it, you know.
There's a big industry built around every 6 months of an Ubuntu release, and it's going to be a big change up, but
yeah, that
sounds like
you're never angry when Gmail updates, are you?
No,
not generally. Although I have been Google Docs a couple of times.
Yeah, Google Docs, but they always gave me a way to revert those. So that
for
was
usually
okay.
a little while. And usually I end up liking it, and the changes are for the best.
You're not upset because it works. Right. Yes, I mean some buttons move around, but I mean I've never known Ubuntu or Canonical to be the company that says we're not going to drag you along to the future.
Right.
That's the idea. That's where we want to head. We don't want to stay in the old linear panels days of GNOME 2.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. This is true. That's for sure.
Well, it's an interesting and fascinating time, and if folks like System 76 are directly on the front lines of whatever the outcome is going to be. Do you have any other kind of thoughts or anything you want to touch on before we wrap?
No, I think we covered it pretty well. I'm excited about the future.
Yeah.
Regardless of what decision comes out of this, we're confident we're going to be able to build great Ubuntu products. We love what they're doing. I love Ubuntu Touch. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. We get to create more things, and to me that's a wonderful future.
Absolutely. Well, Carl, thanks for coming on and chatting about System 76 position and all of this, and we'll keep in touch as things develop and keep people updated. All right.
Great to be with you guys. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Pro tip, does anybody know why they named it Mir? They named it Mir because it is their first stop on the way to the moon, because they acknowledge they're shooting to the moon to build a display server.
Yep.
That's why they named it Mir. I mean, they it could be Canonical's grand contribution to the community. It could also be a huge flop. But right now, it's nothing. There's nothing there other than just wait and see what happens.
Well, I think if we hold up two sticks and see which one's moving, you've got Wayland in one hand and Mir in the other. Wayland's not moving.
I mean,
I'm sorry. It's
Wayland's
cute.
Just
why
like,
do you need drivers? Why would you need drivers for something that's not even working yet?
Wayland plans to introduce maximize and minimize support. Wayland hopes to get proprietary drivers. Wayland thinks they might have a way to do OpenGL.
So, you know, so I don't care if Coca-Cola comes out with a display server and it's open source and it's better than what anyone else is doing or whatever the company may be. I don't care who it is. And it's open source. I just, for me, it's like, well, what about Wayland and proprietary drivers? Won't that affect them? It probably will. It's this thing called competition, and if they're not able to cut it, tough.
Yeah. I think what we have here is what Canonical didn't want to do, and they kind of did a little bit, and this is what they got in trouble for, is they wanted to basically say, you know what? We thought Wayland was going to be kick-ass, and the XWork Foundation just hasn't gotten off their butt, and they haven't shipped. I mean, they've shipped, but they haven't shipped in any substantial way that you can actually deploy. So
this could light a fire under their butts. I've seen this happen with video editors.
Exactly.
I've seen video editors that, like, two open-source ones that actually one started really progressing.
It will light a fire
and then one, and then the one that wasn't progressing was like, oh, we better get off our butts and actually start coding, and they did. So I think that's a very real possibility, too. So this could benefit Wayland.
You know, Canonical might have to take some of that effort on themselves. I mean, I suspect
they probably have.
I mean, like, I think it's, like I mentioned in the interview, I think it's hilarious that people dog on Canonical all the time for using Upstart. And it's like, do you not have any perspective of history? Yeah. Upstart existed as shipping code before Systemd. So, of course, they're using Upstart. And what kind of moronic distro would just switch out their entire init daemon on a whim because something else came along that essentially accomplishes a lot of what they already are doing?
Well, it's because they're trading touchy-feely, you know, software religious stuff for practical action. And I'm not saying and all distros do this, not just one versus another.
Like, but, as a server admin, I am pissed that Red Hat is switching from Upstart to Systemd. I just wish they would have just stayed with Sysinit until Systemd came out, to be honest with you. Because as a server guy, I got to rewrite crap. I got to redo stuff. I got to test that deployment. I got to test application compatibility across the board now. It's a pain in the ass. And so it would be ridiculous if they switched from Upstart right now. It would be ridiculous, especially when they have everything else they're trying to do, like create a whole new display server craziness.
Right.
So I think
So what you're saying is it's not an issue of being I'm in love with this because it's attached to Ubuntu. I'm in love with this because I can make it work in my everyday
world. And it's existing code that's shipping.
Right,
I think people get all worked up. I mean, in this whole thing, I keep seeing Systemd brought up again. First it was Launchpad, then it was Upstart, and then it was Libapp Indicator.
Things that work.
I mean, things that are shipping.
Yeah,
they're shipping, people. Yep. I mean, you know, come on, give them a break. Maybe they'll actually make something happen here. Maybe not. Maybe they'll fall on their face. Let's see what happens.
And it could benefit the other guys.
I mean, you just have people, bailing from the project. Oh, this and that.
But they're honestly, you know, the loud minority. Who cares?
How many of you out there have bought a laptop that shipped with Arch pre-installed? How many of you have done that? How many of you have bought a laptop that shipped with OpenSUSE pre-installed?
Bearing in mind that you can take those Ubuntu pre-installed computers and install Arch on them, but you're not going to have vice versa.
The impact that Canonical has had just there in getting Ubuntu in the hands of millions of more users is actually quite the accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually have accomplished some impressive things. Now, are they screwing up? Are they maybe focusing too much on touch? Looks like it, doesn't it? I mean, it seems like that's
I'm not in love with their mobile stuff on any level.
Let's find out.
Whatever,
let's stay tuned and find out, because honestly, what's everybody else doing?
Yeah.
Just kind of sitting around doing the same old same. And if that works out to be better, we just switch. You know, like, seriously, like, the first time I heard this, my first thought was, well, I'm going to go download Arch. And I did. I have Arch ISOs on my drive right now. Sure. I downloaded that install Arch script. That was my first reaction. And I thought about it a little more, and I thought, yeah, you know what? Maybe in 2 years, Arch is going to be using me.
Yep.
So we'll see.
Well, and as one person pointed out, well, there's other vendors that are shipping with distros other than Ubuntu. You're absolutely right. Why don't you call them, though? DA reason. But call them and ask what their number one shipping distribution is.
Yeah, how many are they shipping?
Not the other distros. And that's not because I'm saying I'm in love with one over another. I'm just simply pointing out the numbers don't lie. Even if I got a stick at my rear end one day and decided I'm done with Ubuntu and I hate it and I'm going to go to this other thing, that doesn't change the numbers.
Right.
You know, what's released, what's available, what's shipping,
right,
and what's being used. It's just a reality.
And,
it's just what it is. You don't like it, change it yourself.
I think the practical reality is we've gotten to a point now where we have Mint, if you need Ubuntu compatibility, you can switch to that.
Sure.
If you're adventurous, OpenSUSE 12.3 has an amazing release coming out in 3 days. Fedora 19 is going to ship with GNOME 3.8. If you want to play with that, that's going to look good. I mean, there's a lot of options here.
Absolutely.
But what I don't get is just the total hatred.
Well, it's because people love a bandwagon. They love to follow the Pied Piper. So rather than just saying, you know what, not for me, but I'm totally in love with Arch and I'm going to embrace it and I'm going to love it and I'm going to love it to death, that's awesome. But to rant on another distribution, and I've been known to do this, and I'm guilty of this as much as anybody, but it's not productive. Embrace the distro that's working for you and love it and support it and promote it. Don't just sit there in your easy chair going, hey, isn't Arch getting enough news? Well, promote it. Blog about it. Share the news.
Like Josh Strubble in the chat room says,
if it's important to you, do it.
We don't know this for sure, but like Josh in the chat room says, I bet System 76 has sold more computers running Ubuntu than some distros have people using their distro altogether.
Oh, yeah.
And you cannot argue the fact that our numbers show that there's 3-to-1 Ubuntu users in our audience than any other distribution. And it's just.
And it's the numbers. It's not an opinion.
The numbers are there. And when people are giving Canonicals come out and say, well, maybe it's time for us to lead instead of just to iterate. And
right.
Let them try. It doesn't mean we have to follow, but it means we can see what they do. And what I hate is, why do we have to launch all these attacks and all this criticism? Because maybe they end up building something good and we are going to want to use it. And then we're going to look like a bunch of jackasses.
Well, we're a room full of monkeys with big sticks and we like to hit each other. I mean, that's how communities operate, is everybody's got an opinion and everybody's got to force their opinion, because it's a passion. They're passionate about it. And, I get that. And in many ways, it's healthy. I think it is healthy for people to say, well, I think it's stupid they're doing blah, blah, blah. That's fine.
Well,
but let's also find ways of promoting what's important to you, too.
Here's a nugget of truth in all of this is one of the reasons Ubuntu is going to build their own display server is because they want to have a competitive advantage over anything anybody else has. And if they use the same stuff everybody else is using, if they use Wayland, then anybody could just take all the same components, repackage it, and sell the same exact thing. But if Canonical has their own fancy magic touches, they're going to have a competitive advantage over everybody else. And while you out there might not like that, that might make you feel uncomfortable because it doesn't sound like it's freedom in the freedom dimension. It might sound a little negative in the freedom dimension.
Right.
The reality is, that's what it takes to make a competitive product in the mobile market space. Yeah. You got to have a little competitive advantage. And the fact that they're making it open source means other people could use it.
Right.
But if I was Mark Shuttleworth, I wouldn't want to use Wayland either. It's slow. I don't have control over it. I can't dictate its future. Right. I can't say my product is going to be X because, well, you know what? Wayland doesn't do X, so I guess we just won't do it.
And to clarify someone in the chat room, it's not about being popular. It's about shipping and open source.
And,
two big components that have nothing to do with
it. Like Carl said, he made a great point. Same. They've shipped 15 releases on time. I've never even thought about that.
Yeah.
But that is actually a pretty big accomplishment in the Linux distro world. I mean, look at the trouble that Fedora's had recently.
And it could be cool to see Mir coming into other, like OpenSUSE or Fedora. I mean, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a minute. All that griping I did is really a moot issue because it's not about Ubuntu.
If you take things like a rootless X server, so that way you have X compatibility. Yeah. If you take things like driver compatibility agnostic across the different display managers, we might even live in a world where Gentoo and Arch users just swap out the display server depending on, I'm going to do Mir today. Oh, I'm going to do Wayland today.
Right.
And
maybe different tasks or different things. I mean, at this point, I would love to see Wayland. Wayland is basically needing to be renamed to Waiting because that's essentially what we're doing.
Waitingland.
Well, I don't mean to harsh on them, but until now, if it comes out swinging, it's like, wow, this Mir thing's really got us riled up. We're pissed off. We're going to actually, release code that people can use. Awesome, because I've seen this happen before to where a newcomer comes in, pisses off the existing folks, and they're like, you know what, that's fine, we're going to overtake them. Sweet. Wayland rocks it, you know, they overtake Mirror Mirror, becomes just a memory. I support that.
That's a great
because
outcome,
code's
right?
being released.
And it's a good outcome for users. So
yeah, that's all I care about. I don't care. Like I said, I don't care if Coca-Cola comes out with a display server. Long as it's open source, can be used on any distribution, and it's good for the users.
And I get
that's all I want.
Like there's the Kwin guys.
Yeah.
Little butthurt that Shuttleworth came out and said Kwin will work on Mir, and they're like, wait a minute, we don't have any plans to do that. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that they pissed on Wayland and they got like the input stuff wrong, that's embarrassing, right? Yeah. But probably what they really wanted to say is Xorg is bureaucratic, the foundation can't ship at on a Wayland, and we need to move on.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about the pivot they went from the cheerleader to this. I think they actually were trying to be the good guy and not just come out and call them out for being kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. How's Wayland working out for you? Oh, wait.
I'm still waiting.
And I bet we have a handful of people in the chat room that are using it right now.
Why? But I mean, it's like, it's not
fun. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to play with, but it's not really usable yet. When it is, that's awesome.
Hey, XBMC was just ported.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to throw that into the show. So I just want to say that this segment is sponsored by System 76.
Yep.
Head over to System 76 and get yourself a good machine. Now, we just talked to Carl. He has no idea, you know, he has no connection with the advertiser or anything of that into the business. So we wanted to move it to this segment, though, just to kind of keep it separate. But I want to say, we were doing the whole hangout here on my Bonobo Extreme. I play my games on this thing all
really
the time.
Well. Great hardware.
I love this Bonobo Extreme. If you want a great, powerful experience on the go check out either the Gazelle Professional or maybe the Bonobo Extreme. Both of those are going to really do what you want. But if you really want to rock it, go with the full 17.3-inch monster here, the Bonobo. I've got two SSD drives in this thing.
And you've had some real good love on KDE on this machine.
I have. KDE works great. Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, great. Same. NVIDIA graphics on this thing. And they have all kinds of great machine systems built to run Linux.
Yes.
And they obviously are integrated into the community. They are watching and following everything that happens.
Sweet.
And you can always guarantee that they're going to give you a system that's going to work the way you expect.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Matt, why don't we do some emails before we get out of here?
Okay.
You ready for that?
Yep. Free up the inbox for the flood that'll be coming in after the show.
Right. Yeah, we're probably going to get
spanked.
Oh,
we're going to get spanked. That's okay.
Mr. Manko wrote in to give us a little update on Proxmox. Remember we covered Proxmox? And they just recently shipped a new version of Proxmox, too.
Oh, right on.
So he consolidated a bunch of servers, and he said instead of paying for ESX, which the company simply didn't have the budget for, or using Hyper-V, which has limitations like USB pass-through, degraded XP 32-bit performance, and they also considered KVM. But after all, they went with one Proxmox server with the data stored on a SAN.
Oh, wow.
And with the price of servers these days, will be one of two, so we can live migrate if required. So he's going to have central storage with two virtual servers. He just wanted to say LAS is awesome and helped him out with a real-world problem. He said, I've read the manuals and online information, but getting that real-world example from other companies' experience and problems was a good way to understanding the product. It's nice to get some insights on technology from other people. Your show helps, and I love your recent look at software that can be used in the business world as well.
He's also
a big fan of LAS, TechSnap, and Coda Radio.
Nice.
Boy, if he just
got good taste.
Got Cybyte, Unfilter, and Fosho in there, he'd be, I'm sure he does.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Cool. Hacker O. White writes in, Matt.
All right.
That's a great name.
Yeah.
He says, Dear Lass, I'm a big fan of the show, and I've been watching for almost half a year now, and I just have a couple questions I'd like to pick your brain about.
Okay.
All right, number one, Matt.
Mm.
What is the advantage of using OpenJDK over proprietary Java?
Depending on your views, your ability to sleep at night. I think it really just depends on your preference and probably software related stuff. I don't know.
For me, it's always I go with OpenJDK because it's just right there in the repo.
Yeah, it's easy,
right?
You know, you don't have to monkey with anything.
Most stuff seems to be compatible. The reason so basically, here's my rule of thumb. First, I try OpenJDK. If it doesn't work, then I try the proprietary Java.
Makes sense,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it's updated frequently, and again, it's nice and open, so cool.
All right, question number two. I've installed Linux Mint 14 on my Opus computer, and I'm wondering if it's possible to save his most important programs before downgrading to Linux Mint 13 LTS.
Yes and no. If you go to matthartley.com and search software backup, using that same technique, because it is software title list versus the actual like packages.
So it's going to be older.
It'll be older versions for that release, but it should work.
So he can use your technique to export all the installed packages, and then once he reloads, he can.
And my article has the GUI, you know, the easy peasy way. And below in the comments, someone actually did the text command line version.
Nice.
If you want to try that as well, I've had mixed results of the command line version. I wouldn't recommend it, but you can try it.
Okay,
you know, whatever.
Yeah, there's a few scripts out there to try it.
Yeah, some of them are kind of hit and miss. But
Bruno writes in to let us know about his mom's running Linux adventure. He says, hi, Chris and Matt. My mom's computer runs Linux. After hearing her complain about how slow her laptop was, it's a three-year-old Dell running Vista. Yeah, I bet it was.
Wow, Dell, Vista, and 3 years old. Wow, okay, that's pretty painful.
I decided to test her out. When she came home from a two-day trip, there was a nice Ubuntu box waiting for her, and nice. She actually enjoyed it.
Right on.
The first thing she said was, wow, this is so fast. Right. It even looks nice.
Right. God, that's good. That's awesome.
She's been using it for 2 weeks now and hasn't had a single problem. She even changed the background all by herself.
Sweet.
Now, here's the thing. Sadly, the installation wasn't without problems. Sure. The wireless needed some work to function, although I found a solution easily in the Ubuntu forums, and I used the open source driver, so I didn't have to,
You'll be better off for it.
Thunderbird, he was able to export her Outlook into Thunderbird-friendly format, so he was able to import that, and she's loving Thunderbird more than Outlook.
Right on.
She said, and he also says, thanks for the awesome shows. I'm watching this and waiting for my TechSnap 100 shirt.
Sweet.
Yeah. TechSnap 100 just came out this week.
Yes.
And we had Mr. Jude in studio.
Yeah, that is an episode to watch. That was awesome.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
James writes in with a question about audio feedback. He says, hey, guys, I noticed you occasionally play audio feedback from Skype or phone recorded messages. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Just to be honest, it's a lot better than when you just read out emails. Ouch.
Well, you know, it's more dynamic, and I would tend to agree with you.
I understand.
It's just more time consuming.
I suck. But I'd like to be able to record it a few times. If I just threw together a big old FLAC file and sent it your way, is that something you could cope with / prefer? It would certainly be better quality. What would be the right way to send it? I could just use this contact form and include a link to my Ubuntu One folder. Let me know. Actually, that'd be probably the best way.
Yeah, and as far as what you're sending it as, honestly, 64 AUG would be fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
I just play it in VLC.
You know.
So whatever VLC plays. Now, if you want me to edit it down, like if you want to record a few times and screw up,
right.
I may or may not do that, just depending on my time before the show. But if you do, give me like a WAV file, actually, because then I'll just open it up in Audacity and tweak it and then export it out to probably a FLAC or MP3.
Yeah, exactly.
AUG.
Yeah, because I mean, really, WAV's perfectly adequate. Sure.
Yeah, well, and I'm an editor, and I'd prefer to edit in the original high-quality source. All right, so John writes in, and he is a member of the Etherpad Foundation.
Oh,
remember
right
we did the Google Docs killer episode
and
we featured Etherpad?
Yeah, yeah.
He said, hey, guys, love the piece you did. You might check this out. And he includes a link to a YouTube video of a screencast you posted using Etherpad. And it's a new version of Etherpad that has shipped. And they've added a really cool feature called slideshows, HTML5 slideshows.
Right on.
That, yeah. So he includes the video here. So he builds out the slideshow in the Etherpad, and then he hits play here, and you can see there's a little animation there.
Oh, wow.
And now he's going to go into play mode, and there he's full screen play mode now, and he's inside the Etherpad that they've collaboratively edited together. He's now got this super funky slideshow that he's
That's crazy. Doing. I love it.
Yeah, so you could actually like collaboratively work on a presentation.
I like that.
Using
nice.
Etherpad. That's a great idea.
That's very, very cool and very useful.
We got to give this keynote. Let's get all of the stakeholders to get in there and add their notes and add all this stuff.
So much less scrambling in the long run.
Etherpad and Gobi or Gabby, whatever.
Gobi.
Yeah.
Nobby.
So those are some great collaborative editors that if you haven't done collaborative text editing,
it's really nice.
Yeah.
Especially if you're with people that are in this like-minded, you know.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
Yeah, Matt. And you know what? Open source and free. So I love that too.
Love it.
All right. If you want to get your email on the show, email us, linuxactionshow@jupiterbroadcasting.com. Or you can go to Jupiter Broadcasting, just pop the contact link at the top of our website. Or even better, go over to our subreddit, linuxactionshow.reddit.com, and start a thread. Then other folks in the community can chime in. There's been some really great threads over this week.
And we've been known to frequent there as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to get our attention, that's usually one of the best ways to do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Matt, what have you been up to this week?
As always, you can find me at datamation.com. Scroll down to open source and click through there, and you will find me dominating in that area. And
you just did a new post that
I did. I've discovered that I really am not all that wowed by Chrome OS.
So but, you did a Google Chrome OS versus Ubuntu.
Yeah, right. The idea was kind of initially it was going to be kind of a smackdown, and I kind of toned it down a little bit from that because I figured the whole wrestling reference might be lost on folks from other regions. But overall, it was kind of a comparison as to just who's best suited for which and what the differences are and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Very nice, Matt. That'll be a good read.
And I'm also on Facebook. And then I think it's what?
Matt Hartley Public?
Matt Hartley Public.
Yep. And of course, we have links to that and your Twitter profile. Mine as well, Google Plus.
Yes.
Brief mention, we should have a link in the show notes. We have a new Jupiter Colony Google Plus community. We're transitioning from our forums. We're trying out this, and it's working great. So if you go over to Google Plus, search for the Jupiter Colony community, that's us.
And it will pop down, and you'll see some Jupyter Broadcasting stuff. Just look for the community.
We got a last discussion forum in there. There's been some great stuff. We got every show in there, and it's really turning out great.
It's really tidy, nicely segmented. I love how they compartmentalize everything so it's easy to navigate.
Right. I mean, just awesome.
Really sweet.
It's a great community, great moderators. It's really turning out pretty nice.
Very happy with that.
And I don't know how many of you out there are users of the Google Plus communities. I honestly, it took me a little while to warm up to them.
And for me, it's like, oh, wow, I'm going to burn for this, but honestly, for me, the difference between Facebook and Google Plus, it's like about 20 IQ points. I just found that I'm having better conversations there versus instead of spreading the latest old wives' tale on Facebook, I'm actually talking about things to do with to do with technology. Right?
That is what Facebook is turning into.
So yeah, just
go check out the Jupyter Colony community. Say hi to Albert over there, who's rocking it,
doing an awesome job.
And join us in there, and you can chat with us throughout the week.
Yep.
And just a quick reminder, TechSnap 100 shipped this week, our 100 episodes in a row, and boy, did we have a great one.
If you watch one TechSnap, this is above and beyond any other. Watch this one.
I don't know. I thought 101 turned out even better.
Did it? Oh, yeah. So I haven't caught up to 101 yet.
No, it hasn't been released yet.
Okay.
But if you watch 100, then you can be the judge yourself. Yes. So go out.
But 100's awesome, and then definitely follow it up with 101 then.
Yes. All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for tuning to this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. Don't forget, you can join us live Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific over at jblive.tv, or then just grab the show for download later on and subscribe to it via RSS and get the show automatically. Also, we have torrents available and a new WebM torrent.
Yes.
You know what? With Google now signing that license agreement, screw it. Let's do it.
Viewing, WebMM is fine. Yeah. For editing, it's a nightmare. Yeah. But for viewing, it's fine.
It's slow to encode. It's three times longer, and the quality isn't as good.
Well, in some editors, you make a cut, and then it doesn't actually happen.
Editing WebM is a nightmare. No, I'm just talking about encoding WebM.
Yeah. Oh, encoding's slowest.
But if you want it, you don't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah, you just get to enjoy the after we've beaten the hell.
We torture ourselves. Now, I'm only putting it out as a torrent right now because the file size of WebM is almost as large as the HD version of X264. So it's only available for torrent, but if you go to the show notes, you'll find a link to that now, as well as torrents for the HD version and the mobile version of the show.
That's right. WebMM is Matt's answer. It's like me after chili. It's a little bloated, but it works.
Yikes. All right, everyone. Well, thank you for tuning to this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. We'll see you right back here next week.
Oh, that's not good, Matt. That's not good.
Uh-oh. Daylight savings is just proof positive that time is completely made up and that us humans just grasp onto this concept to try to bring sense to our lives. In reality, we just make it all up as we go. And the fact that we just move time randomly, I think, proves that. Well, now this is 8 o'clock. All of a sudden, boom, that's 8 o'clock now. We just arbitrarily assign numbers to rotations. We're such monkeys. Aren't we?
That's true.
The shiny thing. Oh, okay, there's one, there's two. Look at the monkeys. They can count. How adorable.
No, I mean, I really think they
maybe
are.
Maybe Mark just got a little drunk, and I said, you know what? I like space.
Mirror! Yeah, that's it. International Space Station's next.
A little level.